You're listening to WSHC Shepherdstown. And that concludes the Watchtower show for the day. And now we'll turn over new leaf here. And this will be a special edition of Seven Generations Radio. And I'm very fortunate to have with me today a representative of the Oglala Lakota Nation, South Dakota, from the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. Name is Reed Brown Sr., and his son is also here, Keith Brown. Reed, I want to check your mic and see if you're coming through okay. Can you?
Hello. Good morning.
Okay, yeah, okay. Looks like we're good. Okay. Can you hear okay?
Yes, I could hear okay.
Okay, great. Reed, thank you so much for coming to the show today. Very fortunate to have you. I know you're here for a short time. Drove here with three or four people in your car from South Dakota for the powwow that your son, Reed Jr., was coordinating this last Saturday.
Yes.
And I was very fortunate to have him come in and speak with us and also sing a Lakota song for us. But welcome. Thank you so much for coming in. And we were talking a little bit about your history and some of the things you've done. But let me just turn it over to you and go ahead and just say whatever you'd like to open up here.
Okay, thank you. It's an honor to be here. And first of all, I just want to thank Mr. Dave and Monica Levine and Mike and Marie Desmond and, of course, my sister Catherine Pennington and Rob Shaw. Those are the ones that usually sponsor me to travel. So I really appreciate their help when I do travel. And I've been coming here to Shepherdstown since 1986. And then I was still learning the medicine that I carry. And I'm an herbalist. And I, for 17 years, I studied this medicine before I brought it out. So I had friends that came from Baltimore that had AIDS and took the medicine, and they're still alive today. So then this medicine is really hard to find. Wherever I travel to, I try to find a plant. Even looked in the books, and it's not in the books. So I wonder if it's a mystery or, you know, I wonder a lot, too, on the medicine, the plant that I pick. So, and I travel between here, and I come to Kansas City a lot, and then I drive to Albuquerque, where I have patients down there. And I have one patient in Delaware, which I think over the weekend we'll be traveling that way. And I like people to unite together, kind of like unity, where we all gather and try to make the world a better place for our next generations to live. And I have grandchildren, and I have great-grandchildren, too. So I want them to have a life like I did. And that's about it.
And you were saying something about this is the seventh generation and that changes are coming about because of this. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. I am the sixth generation, and my kids are the seventh. And now my grandkids and great-grandkids are coming up. So we like to leave the world as it was when we were young. And I want my kids to have, my grandkids to have something. And I just want to leave something good behind so that, you know, the world be a good place to live for all of us. I like to, you know, unite all people, all colors, all races, that we get together and maybe we could make the next generation better for all the children.
Well, one thing that always strikes me when I hear that, and I know you're devoted to community and the fact that we all have red blood together, But there's been a difficult history between the white man and the native people, and I wonder how you address that in your spirituality and in the way that you move forward.
It's hard because back the third and fourth generation, maybe the fifth, they were fighting a lot amongst the white man. And in our generation, we are supposed to start gathering, bring them people together. And it don't, like I said, it don't matter what color you are. Our blood is all red. So we try to gather. But I had problems whenever I brought first, I don't like to say white man or black man, I just say other people into our circle. And my grandparents were kind of upset, but my understanding with this is, like I said, our blood's all red, everybody. So I include all people into our circles, and I feel like we should all get together and unite so that we could all like make the world a better place and changes. And
well, it's an interesting switch in a way, because I feel like a lot of what has happened in the last, during my generation, is that young people moved more to the anonymous stage. They moved away from community, and that's one of the things that has been lost in my experience. A lot of the way people plug into corporations, uh-huh, or work outside of their homes, so the sense of community kind of got lost a little bit, and now I can see that you're emphasizing the other way, which is bring it back to community.
Yes.
How do you go about that?
Mainly just talk to people and tell them what I do. I try to tell them what I do and explain a little bit myself, and then they from there, like word of mouth gets around, and we try to gather, make a date. And like in June, we have on our reservation in Pine Ridge, the summer solstice comes up in June. Either it's 19th or the 21st, and that's when even the tribe stops. The offices, a BIA building, they all stop, and everybody just prays that whole day for unity for all the whole world.
I want to welcome Rob Shaw with us. He just joined. And Rob has been, I guess, you're kind of in-lawed in through your wife, who was adopted into the nation, the Lakota nation. Is that correct?
That's true. Reed's my wife's brother.
And Rob, I understand you've done a lot of research, genealogical research, on the family.
Yes.
That's true. It's a very interesting story, because I think anyone who lives out on the Pine Ridge Reservation has got some interesting stories to tell. It just happens that Reed and Anita Brown, their family seems to have, by twist of fate, connections to almost all of the great historical stories that have come down, whether you're talking about Chief Red Cloud or Crazy Horse and his Medicine Man Chips, or whether you're talking about Wounded Knee Massacre or the sending the Indian children to Carlisle Indian School in Pennsylvania. All of these things have direct connections to Reed and Anita's family. And so if you were James Michener, you could write one of those great historical novels and pretty much cover the entire story of what's taken place out in South Dakota in the last two centuries.
Amazing. What has really impressed you about this research, and could you say a little bit about how good the records are that you were working with?
Well, it's interesting because there's in some ways there are even more records for Native Americans out on the reservation than there would be for the white folks back in the East Coast. And I'm talking about in the 19th century, in the 1880s, 1890s. And I think that is because the government was so anxious to keep track of everybody.
Okay.
So yes. If you're looking in genealogical records for me, for instance, you would have a census in 1890 and a census in 1900, and that would be the only records you would find. But it seems like that the government was taking rolls 1890, 1892, 1894. They wanted to know exactly where everybody was. And so in some ways, you have more records for the Native Americans on the reservation than you would for anyone else. The problem, of course, is there are several problems with Native American research in that there's a tendency to change names. Reed Brown, if you go back to 1880, there wasn't anyone named Brown in his family.
Mm-hmm. There was Brown Buffalo Bull.
Brown Buffalo Bull, and and then other names that come and go. I know that the Red Hoop Circle and the Red Hoop Sundance, the Red Hoop Powwow are all named for one of his ancestors, Grandma Red Hoop.
Yes.
But when I went to research Grandma Red Hoop, even though she only lived into her 20s, she went through three or four different last names.
Yes.
That's tricky.
Yeah.
Plus the fact that in the Lakota tradition, I've learned from listening to Reed's stories, almost everybody is his grandfather.
Yes. Yeah.
That makes it tough.
In 1956, when I was born, I was like the only grandchild of the town. So I become the grandson of everybody. And it's still that way today, that when I go into town, out of respect, you have to stop and shake their hand or give a hug. And that's normal, traditional, that we do that.
So you really have a very strong and large community where you live.
Yes, yeah.
Is the Pine Ridge Reservation the true ancestral home of your people?
No. We mainly in the Black Hills. That's where there's seven caves in the Black Hills. And each nation came out of one of the caves. And we come out of the cave that they call it that breathes air, but it's called Wind Cave. That's where the Oglalas came out of. And Black Hills is our home. And it was the government is the one that put us on the reservations, where they thought the land would be no good, and it was in the Badlands area is where they put us. But now the government's finding all kinds of minerals that they want, and they want to buy off our land or trying to take it so they could. 10 years back, they found a mineral called zeolite, and they dug a big hole, took 55 million tons of zeolite just for testing, and we never, got compensated or anything for that. But that stuff is cancerous because they, some of the locals used it. They told us it was for fertilizer, so we used it, and the ladies that used it got cancer.
Oh, man.
So it, so we don't mess with that. And yeah, so that zeolite is back in the 80s and early 90s, the computer board or computer would burn a lot, while that zeolite is being used in these computers in the back now, so you don't hear of a computer burning. And NASA is the one that came and dug up all that. They use it on their space shuttle with the tiles that don't burn, and that's what they use that zeolite for. So.
Mm-hmm. Could you talk a little bit about governance on the reservation and in the Lakota Nation?
Okay, we our reservation is a little bigger than the state of Delaware, and we don't have, like you guys have your sheriff and state troopers, we don't have that on our reservation, and they're not allowed on our reservation. We have our own police force, and like you out here, we have the president, vice president, and then secretary, treasurer. And then each community has, like you have out here, the senators, we have council, men or women. And funny thing is that this last 4 years, we had two women become council ladies, and this time around we have four. And so, like us with the sixth generation, the seventh generation is where the changes are going to happen, and we feel that the women are involved now, and that's the change that we've been looking for. Is have all the female and male work together, where prior to that it was always the male. So, but in our culture, is the woman that owns everything and owns the land, house, everything. So, and the man is supposed to do all the work and do, you know, and so. But now there's equal, and that's the way our grandfathers foretold, that one day we're going to all be equal with the women. And that's where we're at today.
I might mention here that that his great-grandfather, Chester Redkettle, was actually president of the council back in 1950-52.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is this matriarchal society, now you're... Are you saying that this is going back to the traditional ways that of your ancestors?
Yes.
It's returning.
It's returning, yeah. And then we, on our reservation, we have four white buffaloes that were born. And they tell us that when the white buffalo comes back to our nation, then our nation is going to change and grow. And so now we have four of them, so we're real proud of them. And the people that own the buffalo don't want to advertise because they're scared that you get a lot of tourists coming and stuff. So they want to wait till these buffaloes are like 2 years old, 4 years old, then they'll let other people see them. But for now, it's just tribal members that could go see the buffalo.
How is your education system on the reservation? Is it similar to off-reservation? And what is the status of your children these days? What are the things that you're focused on with the children?
Well, mainly my children try to go to school and get the education they need to live out in the world. And my grandkids, we want to give them something back. And our education is similar out here. We try to have a native teacher so that they're... A lot of the students are still kind of scared of the white man. And so when you have a native teacher, the students are more open to the teacher. And so we try to hire our own native teachers, and then we have our own college now. So right out of high school, you could go right into college, and each community has a college center where you can go apply and go either day school or night school in the evening times. So we try to, but the grandfathers always said we needed doctors and lawyers. And so a lot of them are into lawyers. My wife is a lawyer. And she was, while she was doing her internship, she had to be a judge and a prosecutor. But she really wanted to be a tribal lawyer. So that's what she does part-time now. She's kind of sickly, so she don't do very much.
Reed, while on the subject of education, maybe you could talk a little bit about preserving the Lakota language, because Reed speaks mm-hmm. the language, but I know that a lot of the younger people haven't learned it in the same way he did, and I know they would like to change that.
Yeah. Yeah, so we, like, I go into the school there. I live in Wanblee, and our school is called Crazy Horse High School. And because of Crazy Horse being around Wanblee area when he was a kid, they named the school after him. And we try to implement the Lakota language. And now it's in all schools in state of South Dakota. So that's, you know, one of the things that we've always said was if you could speak your language, you would understand, and we would understand each other. And I speak the Lakota language, but I knew it from childhood, since I could remember my grandma and grandpa. We spoke Lakota, and if you came in and spoke English, you'd get no answer back. And so then you would have to speak Lakota to get an answer back. So that's how my grandma and grandpa always made it, so that we always spoke Lakota in our homes. And I'll give an example is my wife come to visit, and she's back home, they call them half-breed or a breed. And so she's half French and half Oglala Lakota. So when she'd come in to visit, she'd speak English, and everybody would just leave the room and leave just her and I. Ooh. So that I'd speak English, and they wouldn't have to hear it from me.
Okay.
So
in researching some of Reed and Anita's family, I've run across ancestors. We're talking about 1940s or so. There was one of the grandfathers who, he was really unhappy when the Lakota soldiers came back from World War II, and of course they'd been speaking English all the time they were in the army, and he was really unhappy, and so he announced he was never going to speak English again.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And in addition to the language, what other things do you teach in the schools that preserve the ancient ways of the Lakota?
Well, during spring season, they would bring a buffalo. They would take a few students out and pick one student to actually shoot the buffalo. And like 5 years back, they used bow and arrow, but I don't think they made the arrow good because it just kept bouncing off the buffalo. Mm-hmm. So they used the gun and killed the buffalo and brought it back to the school. And the elders came and taught the students how to skin the buffalo, and then we used every part of the buffalo, even clear down to the hooves. Inside of the hooves, there's little, I always look at, remember the pig's feet inside those little bones. Well, that's how it looks inside of those hooves of the buffalo. And those were our toys when we were small. And so we try to teach from as when they're like kindergartens, and when we teach them how to do skin the buffalo, and then we'd get the fourth, fifth, sixth graders to do the insides of the buffalo. And well, first of all, when we do the buffalo, the first thing we do is take the heart out, and we cut the heart in half, and then everybody's there. It's up to them if they don't want or not, but we drink the blood of the buffalo while it's warm, and to us that's medicine. And I've seen a person that was real diabetic and ready to have his legs amputated, and he drank the buffalo blood, and now he's walking and he don't have diabetes. So, but you have to really, really, really believe in the God, our Creator is what we call him. You have to believe in him for that medicine to work. So we used all of the buffalo, and then after that we, of course, this is all in Lakota. We try to teach them as we go along. And so we try, and then next is we try to make like bow and arrows. We teach them how to make moccasins, even a war shirt. If you're a powwow dancer, then you try to make your own regalia, because that way you'll know. And it's a kind of like a sentimental value to you that once you make your own outfit and that you really take care of it. Otherwise, if you just was given one, then it wouldn't really matter. But when you make your own, then you really feel the connection there.
One of the points that I think should be emphasized here that Reed's talking about is, we were talking about education in the schools and the tribal colleges, but what I've seen among my Lakota friends is that the education can't stop at school. That
No.
It's very important that the young Lakota people have their education from their elders as well. And I think that the young people that don't get that are the ones that are running into trouble, whereas the ones that are really having the opportunity to learn from their grandfathers are the ones that have something more to cling to give them strength as they go out in the world.
Yes, we noticed that. It's, drugs are all over and on the reservation. It's there now, and we noticed that after school, on Tuesdays and Thursdays we have a Lakota language talk, and then on Thursdays we have a sweat lodge, and so I get anywhere from 20 to 35 young students that come and participate in the sweat lodge, and I noticed that the ones that don't do sweat lodge or come and pray, they're the ones that are out getting in trouble or getting in trouble with the law and stuff like that, or using drugs. So that's what we try to keep the kids away from, is the drugs.
Mm-hmm. Could you talk about the spiritual beliefs of the Native people and the Lakota people?
Okay, we believe that we are all related. That's why in our, when you go to church, you say amen, and us, we say mitakui oyase. That means to all my relatives. And that means that the trees, the plants, everything, we're all related. We all have a spirit in us. And so we try to not desecrate Mother Earth, and we try to walk gently on her and not destroy the plants and the trees. We try to keep everything like how we want to live and have that the spirit of the plants live the same way.
So everything, in your view, is connected?
Yes, yes, everything. With, we are all related.
With the universe, mm-hmm. basically?
Yeah.
I'm having trouble thinking about where to go next with our conversation.
Well, maybe, Reed, maybe you could talk a little bit about some of the sacred ceremonies. The way you express your religion and prayer.
Yeah. I started, whenever I was 2 days old, I died. I was allergic to milk. And so I was raised on soup broth and orange juice. And they had me in a sweat lodge when I was 2 days old. And from then on, I was told that I was going to be a medicine carrier and that I would learn the medicines. So in our tradition, the grandparents usually takes the oldest child of your children, the grandchild, the oldest one you raise, and teach them these ways. So I'm where I got a young grandson named Jojo, and he's learning. And last year, he actually got me ready to go find the medicines. And he's only 12 years old. But I started when I was, I remember like 4 or 5 years old, I was out helping my grandpa. His name was Joseph Chips, and I was helping him dig medicine. And he was telling me how to prepare it and how do you walk up on it. And you know, a lot of times people will go just, he called it attacking the spirit of the plant. But you got to go gently and talk it. You treat it just like a person. Talk to it. You might have to give it a hug and tell them why you're going to use the medicine for. And just so for 17 years, I did that with one plant. Every year I picked it and I'd pray with it, slept with it, played with it. I even cut it open just to see what was inside that plant. And it's just a root. But as I got older, I started understanding what this root was all about. And so whenever my youngest son, Keith, got sick with leukemia, and they told me to come out with this medicine, but I was scared because I seen what it done, and sometimes it gave me nightmares, and so I was scared of this plant. But I started understanding when they said, when the sky is bleeding, then you will come out with this medicine. And I always wondered, till just the last 15 years, I noticed that a lot of these diseases come, it's in the blood. And so this medicine I got cures the blood. It takes care of the blood part. And so, but this medicine, it's really hard to find. It's wherever I travel, I try to find this medicine, the plant that I use, and it's not out here. It's in Wombly is the only place I could find it. And one of the grandparents told me that it's a spirit, so it only stays there for 21 days, and then it's gone. So from early July till August, I'll look, and they only allow us 7 plants per year. We can't go beyond that. So that's what I do, is take care of the plants. We have we call it the garden, but just only 3 of us use the garden with the plants.
Sort of like ginseng here in West Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really powerful, and people look for me. Even my other, I got a cousin, and he's medicine man, and he's way older than I am, but he'll come to me to get the medicine when he leaves. Prior to 1986, they wouldn't allow us to leave the reservation till we really understood the medicine, and there's songs that come with the medicine, how to find it and how to thank it. So prior to 1986, they wouldn't let us travel.
What is your approach to dealing with, you said there are drug problems on the reservation. What is your approach to justice on the reservation, and particularly with the young people and drugs?
What they're doing now with the young people is, when we had an epidemic of meth, and so we gathered whoever we could find that we known of, because the town we live in is small and we're all related there. I'm related to everybody there. And so we know which families are having a hard time, so we would gather them and bring them to the community center and talk to them. And then we even had